Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome back to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast, where we talk about everything in the realm of entertainment news. I'm Justin Cavender. With me, as always, Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How are you doing today?
I am so happy and excited to be spending a Sunday afternoon with you guys while recording this podcast.
You sound like it. you have a lull about you today.
Hey, I'm relaxed. This is a weekend mode. Oh, we don't usually record on the weekend, so I'm a little bit more like relaxed-paced.
Sure. Low key. I like it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. What about you, Dave? You're always with us too, and we love you for it.
I'm glad to be here. Now, I hope everyone who's listening to the Geek Legacy podcast also listens to the Escape Pod hosted by Mr. Randy Van Dyke, where we talk about our next generation episodes, because you're going to see a bit of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde to Mr. Edmondson today. I am fucking fantabulous for this podcast. Next one, you wait to see the terrible episode of The Next Generation they made me watch this weekend. Justin, how are you?
I'm great. I have no complaints. I'm well rested.
Except that Next Generation episode.
Ooh,
we'll
I don't know.
There. We'll get there.
We, I was going to say, we might split hairs here. I don't know.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, there was no hardcore sexo in the space for you guys, so now you don't like it. I see how you are.
Well, those have been the only episodes that have gotten yays so far. For anybody who hasn't been listening to that podcast.
It's a simple creature. That's all you are. You guys are the Ferengis of this podcast, I'll tell you that.
You yay both those episodes too, Mr. Cavender.
I felt peer pressure.
I think on one of them you went first.
Oh. Well, I don't know about all that. Anyway, for those of you listening, this is episode 344 of the Geek Legacy Podcast. That is amazing. Very excited about that. It's been almost a year since we have restarted this podcast. Sort of a reboot, refresh.
Rekindled. We rekindled our love for each other and for geekiness.
We had to take some time off. Well, we all know that the Game of Thrones finale really hit us hard. And it took us about a year to process everything.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, it's really funny. My parents just randomly on a whim like a month ago decided they were going to watch Game of Thrones. They never watched it when it aired. They never, they didn't read the books. You know, no one in their like social circle read it. You know, they just one day decided like, I want to see what this Game of Thrones is about. And so like today I talked to my mom. She's like, yeah, I'm on like season 6, episode 7. I'm like, why are you plowing through it? And it was great. The episode before, my dad does not mince words a lot of times. And so, I think his exact words was, I can't wait for that Joffrey fuck to get what he deserves.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, Dad, we're at a 4-year-old's birthday party. Tone it down, which is real talk. But, and he was like the episode before, and I just was like, oh, man, I want to talk to him in like 2 hours when he gets to see poor Joffrey just die in the most painful, horrible way. So my parents watching Game of Thrones. They must be liking it because they're plowing through it.
Yeah, I'll see. I mean, it's easy to do once.
I already said you can't say.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, getting hooked on a show is easy to do, man. Especially once it's over, and then you know that you can just plow right through it. It sucks when you catch up, and then you gotta wait like everyone else. That's when it's the worst.
Yeah, or there's always that post binge like lulls where you're like, well, now what do I do? because it's so nice when you have like this comforting show that's got like 7 or 8 seasons, and like it's like, well, what do I got a little bit of time? What do I do? Oh, I'll just watch this show. Like right now, Kim's Convenience is that show for me. Like, but I'm almost done with it. So when that's over, I got to find something new. And yeah,
it's definitely hard to do. I mean, I prefer it when it's like a 22 minute show, like something like The Office, where I can watch 3 episodes in an hour and feel pretty good about it. Whereas if it's just an hour show, then sometimes I start to feel bad about wasting my whole day. Like I plowed through Breaking Bad recently, and inside of 2 weeks I was done. And when it's an hour show, you're just like, fuck, I just sat here on my sofa for like 8 hours and I wasted my entire day, and now I kind of hate myself for it.
And that's a show that, you know, is an amazing show, but usually doesn't put you in the best headspace regardless.
I know. Yeah. Gosh, it's depressing for sure.
I actually just started watching something this weekend that is definitely binge worthy. And I think they're dropping episodes weekly, so there's only 7 out currently, but it's on Amazon Prime and it's called Invincible. It's an animated kind of superhero series, but it's very much in the same vein as The Boys. It's adult animation. It's bloody and gory as hell. There's cursing in it. And they do shit there that would be too expensive to do in The Boys. And it's actually really kind of interesting. It's done in the animation style of like the 90s X-Men. And it's got shit tons of celebrity voice cameos, including our boy Mark Hamill. But it's super cool. Highly recommended if you guys have a chance to check it out. And you've got Amazon Prime. It's called Invincible.
Invincible. God, yeah. There was one on Netflix I wanted to check out too. I forget what it was called. Something Bone.
Shadow and Bone or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say Shovel and Bone. But yeah, that sounds better.
That's a different kind of movie.
Yeah.
Eat it. I don't know. Go with the Shadow Bone.
That's funny. Yeah, I stumbled across that. I didn't watch any of it yet, but it looks interesting, and it's based off of books.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yeah. Books. Yeah. Check them out.
Yeah, you know what I've been wanting to do lately?
Shadow and Bone. You are correct.
Okay. I've been wanting to read the Wheel of Time books by Robert Jordan. It's something that many people have recommended to me over the years, and they're always so intimidating because they're like these huge books, and there's like 18 of them, but. Yeah, I've been kind of trying to read more, and so I think it'd be nice to. And since it's 18 books, if I like it, I got plenty to read. But if I don't like it, I can jump off early.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Do you.
I appreciate that.
I don't read. I play video games, and we got a Mortal Kombat movie over the weekend. That was fun.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Yeah.
You're a big Mortal Kombat fan. I see a Mortal Kombat machine behind you as you sit.
Right. Yeah, I'm a super fan. I mean, well, I take that back. I thought I was a super fan, but there are people in our community that are 1,000 times more of a fan than I am. They have dedicated their collections to Mortal Kombat, collections with a K, and they have all sorts of fun memorabilia and collectibles, and I cannot compete with that. They are definitely way more hardcore than I ever thought I was. And,
if you were a real fan, you'd spell Cavender with a K.
I know. I think Kavanaugh tends to be. Maybe not always, but I feel like I've seen it that way.
Yeah, you know what? You can abbreviate it as Cavender's Combat Collection. KKK.
Ooh, that's a terrible idea.
That's a fun.
I like the three C's. I like readiness, recuperation. Oh, geez. And then, so it came out. I watched it on HBO Max. My sister and her family, they all saw it in the theater, and they loved it. They were 100% on board and had a blast. And my oldest sister, Jennifer, the one I did see it, she is someone that I saw the 90s Mortal Kombat with, whatever that was, 95. And she loved that, too, especially the music. She was like, she remembers being in the clubs and hearing it. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about that yesterday, actually. But she's a big fan. Randy, I know you really enjoyed it. You want to talk about your experience?
I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed the bloodiness of it and kind of the silliness of it at times. But I come from a place of complete ignorance when it comes to the video game or the movies that have come before it. Now, I'm aware of the 95 one. I'm culturally aware of it. And I know the theme song from it, which I actually kind of have fond memories of as well. It would have been cool if that would have been incorporated in this one. Of course it wasn't, but I had fun. I watched it on HBO, so I didn't go see it in a theater or anything like that. I would have enjoyed it even more had I seen it on the big screen, but it was a good time. But again, I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I'm not an aficionado. So I went into it completely raw. And if that is what it takes for somebody to enjoy this is just kind of like a mindless bloody action movie, then cool. Right on. It hit me that way. But if you're a little bit more of a super fan, like you are, and like I've seen a lot of people on my feed online, it has not been as generous as my reception of it.
Sure. So I don't want to be too negative about it because it should be a celebrated movie. We've been waiting a long time for a new Mortal Kombat movie. It was a hard R. There was some pretty gnarly fatalities in this movie that were all done really, really well. I think Kano was a was an absolute standout in the movie. Loved that character, and that's coming from someone that's only ever played Kano to get like achievements in, you know, like on consoles and stuff. So it was really cool to like a character that I've never really cared for before. I think that that says something. And so those are my main takeaways. I don't want to harp on it too much. Josh Lawson was the actor that played Kano. He did great. And I do want to say that, you know, there is a new character in this movie named Cole Young. And he is the star of the movie, and it is a new character that we've never seen before. And so that might rub people the wrong way, so be prepared for that. And they definitely set this movie up to have sequels. This one definitely serves almost like, it's weird to say, but it plays out a lot like a prequel. It's setting up a lot of characters, and they haven't really had a chance to really do anything yet. So hopefully it gets a follow-up, and we get to see how it plays out.
Well, I think they needed Cole because there's really not that many characters in Mortal Kombat to choose from.
Right.
Oh, wait, there's like 80 million characters.
So it was only 100. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I lie somewhere between you and Randy as far as my fandom. You know, I enjoy Mortal Kombat. I've always been aware of it. I've seen both movies. And I've played several of the games on the console, but, you know, it's not like a must. I have to get every new version of it. So I'm curious how hopefully I'll be seeing it tonight. So I'm curious, curious what my reaction is. You know, right off the bat, I'm not thrilled that our our POV character is like a brand new character, and some of the other things that we're not discussing because we're not, I guess, not spoiling it, kind of seem disappointing, like narrative wise.
Right. Yeah. It's just one of those things. I'm sure the sequel will be amazing. I'm hoping at least.
But what you know, if you didn't like this one, what leads you to think that the sequel would be different?
Characters that I care about are going to be in it.
No, but would they? They weren't in this one.
They're not in this one, but they're teased for the next one. So I'll take it. Take what I can get. But I mean, I just don't want to spoil anything. I mean, there were definitely some really cool moments. But I do have some problems with it. And I would rather everyone watch the movie and get their take before and I'm not even trying to be snobbish. Like, you know, I understand what a popcorn movie is. You know, out of the three of us, I like a lot of the movies that you guys don't like, a lot of horrible movies. And I'm okay with that. And as someone that loves Mortal Kombat, I can accept that it is an absurd story, and I don't need it to be, you know, realistic by any stretch of the imagination. I just, after watching it, I was like, huh. And it is the second best Mortal Kombat movie ever made. I would say that the 95 one still holds up, but this one is better than Annihilation.
So this is, there's only been two. There's the 95 and then this one?
No, there's three made. There was a sequel to the 95. Version okay. called Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which is
the best one. Which is the best of the three.
I haven't seen the new one,
and I know Annihilation is the best. It's got Shao Kahn in it.
Yeah, so this would be a middle of the road out of the three that have come out for me. But, and I mean, and I, at the end of the day, too, I think it's important to note that Shang Tsung is someone that in the 95 one was one of the coolest characters ever. Like he totally hammed it up, and it's something that's gonna be hard to beat. You know, Kerry Tagawa, he was such a badass in that movie, and he was a lot of fun, and you could tell that he was enjoying the role. Whereas in this version, Shang Tsung is much more muted, and you know, he doesn't bring anything new to the table. Chin Han plays Shang Tsung in this version. And you would recognize him, David. He was Lao in Batman: The Dark Knight.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, the guy that Batman kidnaps.
He's kind of short, isn't he?
Well, they got the camera hocus pocus to make him bigger, I guess.
Okay, but... I didn't know if they were playing him short. Yeah, that's exciting. How was Raiden? I mean, Christopher Lambert's Raiden is one of the highlights of the first Mortal Kombat for me. Was Raiden kind of a nothing burger like Shang Tsung, or did he?
Yeah, for me, he was a little bland for me too. But I mean, that I'm pretty biased in that, you know, Highlander is one of my favorite movies. So seeing Christopher Lambert in anything was always a treat for me. So that was, I am not a fair person to ask. This is one of those things where he could be cast as Ariel in The Little Mermaid, and I'd be like, yeah, it's the greatest movie ever. And I'd be on board with it. So
that'd be a bold choice. I would pay my $10 to see that.
So that's where I'm at. So I do not have any I don't have a valid opinion on that matter. So I must recuse myself from the argument. It would not be fair. I am biased. But I hope everyone else likes it. I know that a lot of people are enjoying it. Friends in my fan circle are loving every second of it. Not my fan circle, my friend circle, the Burns family circle of trust. They're really enjoying it. You know, Zach really liked it. Felix really liked it. So a lot of folks are enjoying it. I think even Stephen Applewood, I think he enjoyed it too. So
everyone but Justin.
Yeah. Everyone but me. I mean, again, I like moments, just not the whole thing as a completed motion picture show. I think they could have done better.
Fair. We can always do better.
Always. So, well, I hope you enjoy, Dave. Let me know what you think. In fact, we'll revisit it next week after a little bit more time has gone by and people can digest it, have seen it, and then we can spoil the hell out of it.
All right. Sounds good. Cannot wait.
Cool. In other news, moving on. Rocky IV, you may have seen it probably 25 years ago, maybe more, 35 years ago, I guess, probably, getting a director's cut. And we've talked about this before, and we mentioned that Paulie's robot's actually going to be taken out of the movie, but Sylvester Stallone did do this fun little Instagram video where he's showing that they're doing a documentary while they're re-editing the movie, and he's got this cool little studio in L.A., and he's talking about, you know, like if you can go back and recut your film, I guarantee you approach it with a sensitivity and a wisdom and a confidence. Like, oh, why didn't I see that before? That is in the clip that we watched on Instagram. And you know, all of us are entitled to follow our dreams, to stick to our beliefs, because in the end, it's all that you have. And if you keep believing in that, eventually your dreams will come true.
And, yeah, I think that one of the strong points of Rocky V is its short running time. You know, it's only an hour and 50 minutes. You know, it's you get in, you get out. You know, if anything, I'd love to see like maybe a shorter version with, you know, there's like 86 minutes of montages in Rocky IV, and I what I like about Rocky IV is that it's very much a film of its time. You know, it's very Cold War era. I would hate for them to be examining this director's cut as a way to kind of connect dots to like to today's world. You know, obviously we still have trouble with Russia. I really, really like the simplicity of Rocky IV of, you know, the, you know, it's them versus us. They're the bad guys. We're the good guys. And then in the end, you realize, oh, shit, it's not like that. You know, they're not bad. They're just different. And, you know, Rocky overcomes. If he can change, you can change. Everybody can change.
That's right.
And, you know, I think the robot is charming, and it's so much fun because it's the product of, you know, the late 80s. You know, we all thought we were gonna have robots, and still, you know, Rocky was rich and could afford it, so he got his robot first.
Right. I know. How many of us saw that movie and were like, I want a robot? How cool is that?
I want two robots.
Yeah. And then it starts talking all sexy to him and everything. At first it's like total robot, like happy birthday, Polly. And then it's like, hey, how's it going? Got you a beer.
You want me to rub your back, Polly?
Yeah. He's like, she loves me.
Yeah, I think at some point he's like, can I get you a beer?
Yeah, that's great.
Trying to get Polly drunk.
Yeah, take advantage.
Now that's we are talking. Well, are you excited? I mean, obviously I'm excited because I love Rocky IV, and I will consume the shit out of the director's cut. But do you feel that Rocky IV is a film that requires or deserves a director's cut, Justin?
Me personally, no. But I mean, I didn't star and direct it either. So I mean, if he wants to go at a new approach, he actually retitled it to Rocky versus Drago, the ultimate director's cut. And I'm excited to see it, but I never thought in a million years I needed it. I was happy with it. It's one of my favorite of the Rocky movies. So it'll be interesting to see what he wanted to do differently.
Right. Do we know, is he just re-editing old footage? He's not shooting. He's not Zack Snyder, right?
I don't think he's reshooting anything, no. Okay. He's aged quite a bit.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously they would, you know, shoot around, you know, him and Top Lundgren. I'm curious. There must be something in the movie that, like, he finds objectionable or that he thinks, you know, didn't age well. And I'm really curious what it is. You know, I don't know if it's the oversimplification of, like, the, you know, the geopolitical nature of Russia versus U.S. If it's, you know, if he wants to more delve into, like, the doping issues of Ivan Drago taking steroids. And, yeah, to me, it just feels like there's something he wants to change so that history will look more fond on the film. But to me, I already look very fondly on this film.
So part of me wants to see more of Rocky and Apollo together. You know, we hear about their relationship being all the, you know, amazing and they're best friends and, you know, they hang out in Rocky III quite a bit, but their relationship is cut pretty short in Rocky IV. So if there's extra footage of them together, you know, being friends to where it's more impactful when he dies, I think that might be interesting. But I don't need to see more training or longer montages or anything like that. But I do think it could be fun to just see more of the argument of whether Apollo should or shouldn't be a part of this fight.
Yeah, I could see it being interesting if they approach it from the, like Drago just doesn't want to fight Apollo. Like, you know, in the movie, it's you know, situated in that, you know, he wants to fight Rocky, but, you know, it's fine. I'll follow Apollo too. You know, it could be a much more interesting character thing for Apollo if, you know, he's like, why would I fight you? You're like 600 and, you know, he's got to, you know, really, really fight for his pride and stuff like that. You know, and that could, you know, that could lead to, you know, the kind of things you're looking for with, you know, the Rocky Apollo, the Rocky and Apollo kind of, you know, interaction. And I'm all for that. I think Carl Weathers and Sylvester Stallone are dynamite when they're on the screen together.
Yeah. What about you, Randy? You got a horse in this race?
Well, I just like seeing, because Rocky IV is probably my favorite of the, let's say, like the original block of Rocky movies, 1 through 5. Just because of, I like how dated and 80s it is. I like that it's steeped in the Cold War era, and I like the montage on top of montage on top of montage. It's just a lot of fun. And to see something that potentially we haven't seen before, I'm looking more forward to that than I am, or I'm thinking it's, I guess that's kind of my reason to be excited about this more so than to see anything removed, is to see what could be added.
You know, I heard a rumor that there was one of those Russian agents that are watching Rocky. You know, he had a run-in with the director and the studio head, and so he's been really jockeying behind the scenes to get his side of the story. So I think we're going to see more of Russian enforcer bodyguard, you know, prison guard number two.
All right, so I mean, I'm excited. I think the documentary will be fun too. Anything that I can do that's Rocky related, I'm pretty much on board. I think we've all gone on the record that Creed is absolutely amazing. Creed 2 is a lot of fun. Now we have a Creed 3 to look forward to. So I'll take any and all Rocky that I can get. Of course, Stallone will not be in Creed 3, but we get to continue the legacy, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm more excited for the documentary than the director's cut of Rocky IV. I mean, I'll watch them both, but I hope the documentary is about Rocky IV as a whole and not just the process of the director's cut. It'd be great to see, like, archival footage of, you know, them, like, doing stuff.
Right. Punching, like, and training
right.
I and pointing at the script.
Yeah, I understand that the intent of the documentary is to, you know, talk about the new film, the director's cut, but, you know, I hope that throughout that process, there's a lot of talking about, like, well, when I was talking to Carl about, you know, this and that, you know, they can show, like, you know, them, like, sitting at a coffee shop, like, just punching each other or something.
Right.
I don't know what they do.
The casting process for Drago is pretty intense. I know that they auditioned hundreds of big ass buff looking dudes to play Ivan Drago, and then when they met Dolph Lundgren, and they're like, whoa, this guy's, he's a big one.
Like, this is our guy. Lot of time. We wasted a lot of time talking to other dudes. If you would have come to the audition earlier.
Yeah, so that's cool. I mean, he is a giant. I mean, especially standing next to Sylvester Stallone, who isn't particularly a tall individual.
Yeah, he was so big and so buff, he got to be He-Man.
Yeah, with a sweet haircut. He looked like He-Man. I was on board.
And virtually no lines of dialogue.
Right. He did some hand signals. like he, like in Saving Silverman. I only know the Air Force signal,
yeah. Not the Navy SEAL codes.
Oh, jeez, but no, he looks great as He-Man. He's awesome. As a 7-year old watching a lubed up Dolph Lundgren, I was on board. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good, He-Man. I'll take it.
Yeah, they nailed He-Man. They nailed Skeletor. Like, Skeletor is a delight, you know?
Oh, sure.
For everything that you can say bad about the He-Man movie, you know, I'll defend it till my dying breath. But, like, you know, Frank...
Langella?
Yeah, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Like, he is giving it 100%, and he is everything I wanted a Skeletor to be. With the exception of he's got a more menacing voice in the cartoon. He's like, I want to be his voice.
Yeah, he's scary, and Frank Langella is scary in Master of the Universe.
Yeah, so aside from the voice, which I love the voice he does too, because it's so terrifying. But yeah, I mean, when they're like coming through the portals, and you see Skeletor, and he's like talking all mean, and starts whispering. I'm like, oh my god, whenever a bad guy whispers. Yeah.
He's like, take it off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Jake the Snake Roberts, the wrestler, like that was his gimmick. Like, you know, all the other heels were like loud and like, yes, this. And like, whenever he wanted to make a point, he'd start bringing his voice down. So you had to lean in and you had to really listen. And like, every word like resonated in your brain. You're like, oh man, this is a bad dude.
Yeah. He's scary. He does, he yells when Man at Arms is like, you dare threaten her life? And he's like, I dare anything. I'm Skeletor. I'm like, oh shit. He just put you in your place. Man at Arms is like, all right, fine, you win. I'll concede this time.
Yeah, easy, Man at Arms.
Yeah, you don't even got a name, bro. Yeah, he's got a title.
You got a title. I am Skeletor.
Anywho. Yeah, and that movie straight up rips off the fucking Superman theme, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It is like almost note for note the Superman theme.
Really?
I never, it is so bad.
Listen to that. And they even do like the flyover credits at a certain point. And, you guys aren't even trying.
No, they're like the Geek Legacy podcast. Oh, man.
Not and even
it's got like the build up and then the dun, 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 dun. He's like, holy shit, George Lucas gonna sue somebody.
Yeah, the best part's when they like teleport like half the car and like Strickland's there. He's got a shotgun, he's taking shots. And it's
oh, I know. Car. He's like, come on, you mother. He starts fucking blasting people with a shotgun. I forgot that Strickland's in. He's like fucking slackers and he's just shooting everybody.
Yeah,
oh, that's great. Oh. And Paris, our buddy Paris from Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah. And Courtney Cox from Scream fame.
Yeah. Scream 4 fame.
Yeah, you love Scream.
I do. I scream, you scream, we all scream for Courtney Cox. I'll take it. So there you have it. Moving right along at record pace for this show. Michael Keaton is on board to do Batman in the new Flash movie. We talked about this a couple weeks ago as well, but he had some reservations due to COVID, but his publicist is like, fuck yeah, man, he's suiting up. He's waiting in the Batcave to get this shit done. And
his publicist is like, take a shot, I need this 10%.
Yeah, totally. And I think we're all on board. We got nothing negative to say about that. Who knows when this movie will come out? This has been a conversation for, gosh, years now. And it needs to happen.
I hope it's more than just like a 30-second cameo,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some multiverse, you know, quick flashing image kind of thing. I hope he has a role of a little bit more substance than that. That's all I got to say.
I could see him not wanting to do it because of COVID concerns. If it was a small part, I would hope that, you know, because he's kind of overcoming his not, I don't want to say fears, but, you know, his concerns. You know, that it would be a much bigger part. You know, I would hope that with the reverence that the Michael Keaton's Batman has, you know, that it would be, you know, not an in and out, you know, that it would have some kind of meat to it. But it's interesting when I talk to like people that you know, where Justin and I work, that are like younger, who, you know, 89 Batman's, you know, it's it for me. You know, it came out when I'm an 11-year-old kid. Batman's like the biggest thing in the world. Michael Keaton is my Batman. You know, but people who, you know, are like 15 years younger than us, who their Batman they grew up with was Christian Bale. And so, you know, they are like, Christian Bale is my Batman. And they find Michael Keaton's Batman a little too schmarmy for them.
Schmarmy.
Yeah, it goes back to the same age-old argument. Like, the people that are generally 10, 15, 20 years younger than us love the prequels, where people generally our age don't look at them very very favorably. Talking about the Star Wars prequels, of course. It's just it all depends which what
you like up. The prequels, Randy.
I know you do, but you're rare. You are a rare little flower. And that's, you know, it's just it's whatever gives you a certain sense of nostalgia, whatever kind of, you know, taps into that little thing that made you happy the very first time that you watched it, that's going to be something that stays with you more or less forever. So, you know, those people, there's no use trying to change their mind that Michael Keaton was a badass Batman. You know, they're going to be the Nolan Batman, the Christian Bale Batman fans for the rest of their life.
Yeah, this is a good opportunity for them, for you know, Keaton to show them what a badass and why he is the best Batman. And I love the idea of bringing the old into the new and, you know, making him, you know, the Batman. Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, their most fond incarnation of Michael Keaton for the younger generation is, you know, going to be his character from the Spider-Man universe, which is amazing. You know, he's I was watching a clip the other day. He's like, this is my favorite scene from, he was doing his favorite scene from every Marvel movie. And the one from Homecoming was that scene with Peter Parker and Toomes in the car going on the way to the Homecoming dance. And
yeah,
he's just so good.
That is good. I like that a lot. Yeah, you know what's cool? One of the things that I think resonated so well with me with Batman was just the ambiguity of the time. Like, you know, like their clothes looked like they were in the 30s sometimes. You know, there was these weird statues and the buildings looked all cool. The cars looked really cool. And I had no idea when it took place. Whereas when you watch Nolan's Batman's, you know, it could be right now. And you walk outside and it's like daylight and Batman's walking around punching people in the snow or whatever the fuck. And so it's kind of, it's two very different movies, just like aesthetically speaking. And I think with the success of the 89 Batman, and then we got the animated series, which sort of kept that same palette and aesthetic, it just really resonated with me. For me, that was perfect. I loved every second of that. It made it feel more like a comic book movie that was brought to life.
And I gotta say, the theme is by far the most memorable of any movie version of Batman that we've ever seen. Just the Danny Elfman score for the 89 Batman, which then inspired the animated series score and the movies that followed it. It's just iconic, and it's really going to be hard to kind of match that.
Yeah, for sure. I like the Hans Zimmer, the Dark Knight. Hans Zimmer, Dark Knight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Just making sure. I like the like, duh, like the one that just like builds.
Yeah.
Like, by the time it gets
the rumble.
Yeah. By the time it gets to the crescendo, I'm like, oh my god, I love this movie so much. But for my money, I'm 89 Batman all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that score is cool. When it goes like wah wah, like all picks up, you're like, holy shit. Yeah, it's cool. I dig the music too.
He about to do something.
Yeah. An hour into the movie.
Yeah, he fixing to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Christian Bale was great. I think when I feel like when I got out of the midnight showing for Batman Begins, I texted you and saying, like, Christian Bale is fucking Batman. Like, he nailed it. But that is some tough shoes to fill.
Yeah, and I think he benefits from arguably being in the best Batman movies. I think Christian Bale is incredible, but I think he had a lot more to work with, where Michael Keaton's, he's done a lot of heavy lifting in that bat suit.
Right. No, that's true. And I really like Batman Returns as well. I know that everyone goes on and on about Jack Nicholson and his Joker and how great he was and just how awesome that movie is in general, but the sequel was pretty good, and it's really dark. Like, I didn't, when it came out, I didn't really appreciate it a whole lot, but as I grew up and continued watching it, I really enjoyed the shit out of that movie. I thought it was so well done. And it's right, a Christmas movie as well.
Yeah. I mean, and the villain of Batman Returns, he wants to kidnap the firstborn of every citizen in Gotham and kill them.
Right.
I mean, that's dark. Much darker than that. I mean, yeah. I think it's been nice. I've always, you know, Returns always kind of falls in the shadow of the 89 Batman for me. But, you know, I've grown to really appreciate it over the last like 10 or so years. And it appears that that's kind of a thing, to where I've seen a lot more people be really favorable towards Returns. And I think that Michelle Pfeiffer and Danny DeVito is ridiculous a character as Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin, is. in that movie, like when he's sitting there in the little like a video game chair, like piling in the Batmobile. My God, it's so funny. And but at the end, he's such like a tragic character. He's so sad. Yeah.
He was abandoned. He's like a melon patch kid.
He's a melon patch kid.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I made a back to school reference to our buddy Wayne just this morning. That's my second back to school reference this week.
I like it. I'll take it. Triple Lindy.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So yeah, we're all on board. Let's hopefully this movie comes out eventually. We'll see. We might get Indiana Jones 5 before we get a Flash movie.
Yeah, we might get an Avatar 2 before we get a Flash movie.
Yeah, I don't know about all that. That's probably going to be a ways. Man, I'm curious when the hell that movie's going to drop.
I mean, it's still slated for this December.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen.
No, I don't think it's going to happen either, but no one, James Cameron hasn't told anyone differently, so...
Yeah, we'll see.
Until James Cameron says I'm moving my date, I'm going to assume that it's on.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope so.
I get to see him showing up at like 4,000 movie theaters across the country, dropping off a hard drive, saying, "Hey guys, play this on Friday."
This is happening.
Taking a road trip, chucking him out of the side of a bus, the Avatar tour bus.
Yeah, like Newsies or something. Extra, extra, Avatar 2. Watch all about it.
I'll take it. Anyway, moving on. We have Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Now, the time of this recording, the series has ended, and we did have predictions as to what was going to happen in episode 5 for our buddy, Mr. John Walker, because when we last recorded, he had just murdered a fellow with his shield, and we weren't sure what penalties, if any, were going to exist. And I think some of us were like, it's just going to be a slap on the wrist. Some people were like, he's going to get an attaboy. We weren't really sure what was going to happen. But as it turned out, the United States government disapproved of his actions, and rightly so. But he didn't get in a whole lot of trouble. He was able to just walk out of the court while the judge was still talking. he's just like, fuck off. I got shit to do. I'm Captain America. I'm going to go save the day. So he did get a slap on the wrist in that. He didn't go to jail. He's not being punished per se. He's just losing his title of Captain America, and he is no longer being in service of the United States government.
What was the discharge he got? It was like a not completely dishonorable discharge. It was some like made up thing I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't good. I think it was done in a way to where he won't get any kind of benefits or pension or whatever the case may be. So we'll see, but he'll maintain his voting rights, I guess. I don't know. It did seem like a light punishment at the end of the day. And then fast forward,
because spoiler alert, he just shows up.
Yeah. So now moving on to the next episode. So now we're at the finale, and a lot happens. I think there's a pretty big action sequence that takes place for a bulk of the episode. It was like sort of a nonstop cat and mouse chase, and. While I enjoyed what was happening, I think it wasn't until the conversation that Sam is having with these leaders that were kidnapped that it really got good for me. I mean, I enjoyed everything that was happening, but I think what solidified it as being a good episode was with Sam taking on the mantle of Captain America, showing that he's a badass and what he stands for, and how, you know, there are going to be people that disagree with him being Captain America, but he is doing what he thinks is right, and he had a really good speech, and I was on board. Very excited about it. But the whole leading up to, and just all of a sudden, I hated John Walker a little bit less when he popped up. I was like, well, I guess he's not that bad of a guy. I mean, yeah, he just murdered somebody, but something in my head just kind of switched to where all of a sudden, I almost forgot about that for a second. I was like, well, if he was like this to the whole series, then I wouldn't have even noticed him whatsoever. He would have been just a cool guy. But I mean, I was arguing with my friends on Discord about this over the weekend, on yesterday. And I brought up Tony Stark because there was a moment in Civil War where he sees Red when he finds out that Bucky murdered his parents. He wants to go take on Bucky and murder him. He's like, you know, fuck this guy. I'm going to shoot a missile in his face and he's going to like it. And that's going to be the end of the Winter Soldier. And I think as an audience member, I was like, yeah, rip his head off. You know, let's do it. And to me, there's no difference between Tony stepping up and trying to murder Bucky than when Walker sees his friend get killed and then takes vengeance on the guy. I mean, they're both world police, as it were. They're both flawed and just resulting straight to murder. But the only reason why Tony didn't get to kill Bucky was because, guess what? Steve Rogers was in his way. But he would have murdered him. And yeah, to me, there's no difference between the two.
I think the difference comes in that there was someone that stopped Tor. Had he actually murdered Bucky, I think that we would have all looked at him very differently. Like, we all understand he's pissed. You know, his parents were murdered by this person. He's totally justified in his actions, but he doesn't kill Bucky. Like if he had...
But not because he doesn't want to. He doesn't get, like, a change of heart. He doesn't.
You know, he's able to kind of repent for his actions because it didn't escalate to that point to where, you know, there's no way that John Walker can, like, make amends with this poor dead super soldier. But my whole point is, like, I was obviously misremembering, like, why he was such a bad guy. And then I realized he just killed, like, one dude, and he was a bad dude. He was the villain. I mean, sure, he probably shouldn't have murdered him, and he shouldn't have murdered him in front of all these people with cameras. But at the end of the day, I mean, he didn't, like, go on a rampage and, like, murder or harm civilians. You know, there was a renegade super soldier who was, you know, part of the terrorist group that had murdered people who were responsible for the death of, you know, all those people in that building the episode before who were plotting these terrible terrorist attacks and who had just murdered an officer of the U.S. military. You know, I think he went a little far in his thing, but I mean, all of it could be put under, like, you know, the flag of war or whatever, to where I understand, you know, they're like, look, you were a PR stunt, just like the original Captain America originally. You were a PR stunt, you know, that we did to, like, kind of put you as a poster child. You know, there are rules involved with that as far as, like, you know, how things look appearance-wise, and you broke that, so you can't be Captain America anymore.
Right. I mean, and it does look just like what we're seeing on the news every single day with police officers caught on film or on a phone murdering somebody. And, I mean, it's an exact replica of what's going on every single day when we turn on the news or check on Twitter or whatever the case may be. Of a uniformed person of authority killing somebody. And now whether it's, you know, in cold blood or if it is, you know, the film just started going and they didn't see the rest of what happened, it is horrible. And it's a terrible thing to see. And when you see him just murdering the guy with his shield, that is awful. And it's heartbreaking and gut-wrenching. And I get the guy's a terrorist, but I mean, Steve Rogers would have slapped him over the head, put some handcuffs on him, and it would have been over and done with.
Right. I mean, we saw that happen in the first Captain America. You know, Zemo is responsible for the murder of Bucky, you know, or what we think is the murder of Bucky. You know, obviously he comes back, but, you know, Bucky falls off the train because of Zemo's actions, and Captain America captures Zemo, puts him in handcuffs, and delivers him to Tommy Lee Jones in the first Avenger. So, I mean, yeah, the scenario you're playing out is exactly what the real Captain America did. This one just doesn't have the same, I guess, scruples as Steve Rogers. But for me, like, my enjoyment of the last episode really stemmed from the fact that I didn't give two shits about anything having to do with Carly. I didn't care about her. I didn't care about her cause. I didn't care about her plans. And so for me, all of the cool action was just noise. And, like, I wasn't as invested in it. But I agree with you when Sam gives his Captain America speech, you know, it's, you know, that's exactly what we loved about Steve, you know, about what Chris Evans did in the Captain America movies. Like, you wanted to follow this guy because you're like, shit, this guy's doing it right. And Anthony Mackie just nailed it. And he did everything right. And, you know, I'm curious where they're going to go with, like, the Winter Soldier storyline or the Bucky storyline. I really, really liked his arc in this story. And as much as I would love to see more of him, if we never saw Bucky again, I feel like we told his story. We told an amazing story, and, you know, I would be happy with how his character went out. Having said that, you know, if they bring him back for the Captain America 4, I'll be more than happy because I love Sebastian Stan and I love this character.
Well, there you go. What about you, Randy?
Well, after looking at all this through the lens of the final episode, I would be disappointed if they didn't bring Bucky back because now I think those two are, I mean, not necessarily as iconic as the Bucky and Steve Rogers version of Captain America, but I still think they're linked kind of intrinsically now. And I would love to see either a movie or an additional season to continue watching those adventures. Now, I know we did get an announcement for Captain America 4,
We did.
Yeah. But still, I wouldn't mind seeing more TV content is basically what I'm saying. But I absolutely loved it. Now, also, because I think last time we talked, we were talking about, you know, the brutal murder perpetrated by one John Walker in front of all the people. And we were talking about, is he redeemable? What would have to happen to make him a redeemable character? I think something you guys just said really kind of just sparked something in my brain. You know, like, what he did, I guess, wasn't that bad. I mean, yes, it is murder. Yes, it's in public. But he was a bad guy, and his buddy was just murdered, you know? He wasn't the dude that killed the guy. But
right.
But still, he was, like, the tangible person in front of him that you could hold accountable for it. And it was just like, you could chalk it up to PTSD. You could chalk it up to, you know, wartime decision-making, you know, like you were saying, all under the flag of war, that kind of thing. But, I guess I didn't really think he could get off as easily, or I guess I didn't think I could forgive him mentally as easily as I did until we started to see these actions unfolding really in the last episode. I was still thinking he was kind of a piece of shit in the fifth episode. Yeah. You know, walking out of the courtroom like, I don't care, I'm gonna keep the costume and I hid the shield, fuck you, you know, that kind of thing.
I know.
It's fun that, you know, Disney did the same thing they did with WandaVision, to where, you know, episode 5, they had their first mid-credit scene. So, you know, you have 4 episodes where you train us, hey, there's no mid-credit scene. And then episode 5 and 6, you know, there are mid-credit scenes. There were 2 really interesting nuggets of info that were dropped in episode 5 that I think seemed like kind of throwaway lines for the information they gave. One of them was when Sam said, you know, Steve's gone. Like, what do you – I guess the question is, what do you think that means? You know, Steve's gone, like, you know, we don't have a way to contact Steve. Steve's dead. And then the second thing is, you know, Bucky heavily hinted that he knew what Steve was planning to do at the end of Endgame. You know, that he made it sound like that they had spoken and that Steve had explained his plan to Bucky, that he was going to go back, he was going to stay back in time, and then he was going to pass the mantle on to Sam. So I guess the first question will be, did you catch both of those things? And then what do you guys think that means as far as Steve's gone?
Yes, I did catch both of those. And I was under the impression that, I mean, it's TV, so they can always bring somebody back or in the movies. But I would take that he's gone as he's just out of the picture. Like, we can't use him anymore. I hope that he's not dead or anything like that. I mean, he looked pretty old and frail, but I don't think that he's, like, dead per se. I just think that he's out of the picture. We can't use him, count on him, go to him for anything. And, you know, of course, the only way to do that is to have them dead. But I think that just more of respecting his wishes that he is no longer a part of the problem or the equation. And then it did sound like Bucky knew that that's what he was going to do, and that he gave him his blessing. And he's like, yeah, man, you go live your life. You know, you missed out on the last, you know, whatever, 50 years. So go have fun.
Cool. That's what I thought.
What about you, Randy?
I totally concur. Yeah. I didn't look into it to mean anything other than he's just out of the equation.
Do we want to see an old Steve at some point?
I don't need to.
No, I think that's been wrapped up so nicely.
Yeah. I mean, our last memories of Steve are him wielding the hammer and beating the shit out of Thanos and then having a happy ending. So, I mean, it seems absurd to open up some weird wound just to have him come back. I mean, it might be cool to see some weird, like, another commercial, like another PSA or something. But I don't need to see an old Steve Rogers have some rocking chair conversation with like Bucky or Sam.
Yeah, I think outside of the What If series, which is going to be animated, I would really like if we never saw Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man and Chris Evans' Captain America, outside of what you said, Justin. It would be fun. It'd be a fun little cameo if you had more of those PSAs. Like when the one teacher, Hannibal Buress, is like, I think he's like a war criminal now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, speaking of war criminals, let's talk about Sharon Carter for a second, because now she is, what do they call it?
The power broker.
Power broker, yeah. And so she was wronged in a way to where she was disavowed by her government. She feels betrayed, and now she's made a living being the power broker, and she's ready to kick some more ass and take some names. And so now we're going to have, I mean, potentially another spy thriller kind of movie with Captain America 4, maybe, to where she is, you know, revealed as a double, triple, quadruple agent, and who knows what's going to happen. But as a fan of spy movies, I'm on board with it. I know a lot of people are kind of indifferent towards Sharon Carter, but I think she was an underutilized character, and I'm ready for more.
Yeah, I wish we would have seen more of, like, good guy Sharon Carter. You know, we got a little bit in Civil War. You know, we got a little bit in Winter Soldier, but really, really just small snippets, you know, to didn't really elevate her outside of, you know, being related to, you know, Peggy Carter. I wish we would have seen a little bit more maybe in either this series or in previous installments that really would make this change for her being a villain to mean more. Because while I think she was great in this thing, and I think it's, you know, it has cool potential, as a viewer, I don't care, I think, as much as I should be for this character's, like, duplicitous nature. But yeah, I'm all for it. Just because, you know, Bucky and Sam and her have a personal relationship, you know, that just gives it more stakes in their film when they have to fight her and take her down.
Mm-hmm.
But as a viewer, I would have wished, I wish I cared more, I think.
I don't think you're alone. What about you, Randy?
To be honest, I didn't even really recognize or remember the character very much from the movies. So it didn't have a whole lot of impact for me one way or the other. So the reveal that she was the power broker and that she's going to be doing something in the future, it kind of fell flat for me.
Sure. So for those of you that don't know, Randy actually fell asleep during the Winter Soldier and hasn't really gone back to revisit to care much about it.
Yeah.
Which is a shocker because it's like our favorite of the Marvel movies.
Well, let me just pitch it to you this way, Randy. It's basically, you remember that scene in Empire Strikes Back when Luke kisses Leia and you realize they're brother and sister? It's like that in Civil War, Captain America and Sharon Carter share a passionate kiss when she returns his shield and Sam's wings. And then now we find out, you know, he went back in time and, you know, he got with Peggy Carter. So, you know, there's some incest there.
So that's not like their daughter or anything?
No, it's not their daughter, no. Okay. She's basically his niece.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's not creepy Uncle Steve either.
Yeah.
I mean, in this case, he is.
like I said, it didn't hit me where it needed to necessarily because I guess that would have been good to know. I really do need to, like, go revisit that movie and pay closer attention. I need to rewatch all the Captain America movies, I think.
It is interesting that we saw, you know, I know we're probably skipping ahead a little bit, that post-credit scene where we had Contessa, you know, Don, you know, officially give Walker, you know, the U.S. agent suit. You know, the U.S. agent is a villain in the Captain America universe because he's exactly like John Walker is in this series. But he is a member of, you know, the Thunderbolts, which is a bad guy kind of group. You know, Red Hulk is in it. You know, there's some really fun characters, and you know, as they continue to kind of introduce these characters into, you know, the larger MCU, it would be interesting because we know Abomination is going to be in the She-Hulk TV series. You know, Tim Roth is going to return.
Oh, that's right.
So it'll be interesting to see if you know, eventually we actually get a movie or, you know, an interaction with a bad guy team.
Yeah. I like the bad guys.
Thunderbolt Ross.
There you go. Yeah, Ross is the worst.
Yeah. Liv Tyler's dad.
Yeah. That guy gets on my nerves. And, you know, back to the whole shield smashing on the poor terrorist guy. I do remember feeling pretty raw and sick while it was happening. And then that shot of looking up at the shield and it was all bloody. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck, dude, I don't like that at all. That's just the worst. And, you know, I was ready for justice to happen in episode 5. And you know, when he walks out of court and he's just like, yeah, fuck off, man. So this is what you paid me to do this. You wanted me to do this. I'm a war hero. And I'm Sharon Stone's cousin, and I'm a war hero.
War hero. And the vice president for 8 years.
So, like, it was really weird because, as a soldier, when he was off in wherever he was, Afghanistan or whatever, and he's you know, having to be in combat regularly, like, this is what he knows, this is what he does, and they put him in a position to continue doing something like that. I mean, they're, to whether there was a level setting expectation conversation that was had, you know, he was doing what he thought was right and okay, and, you know, he's justifying it to himself. And I think that when we do something bad or inappropriate, we try and find ways to, you know, give ourselves an excuse as to why we did it. You know, we try and justify, you know, with someone that worked in loss prevention and having to talk to people that were stealing shit, you know, like, why'd you do it, man? Like, well, you know, I need this, or I wanted that. You know, they come up with reasons. If it was like an internal theft, you know, someone's like, oh, I needed it. You know, I needed the money, or I needed to do this, I need to do that. And
you guys don't pay me enough.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I found that kind of like, that's what he was doing. You know, he's like, you guys paid me to do this. This, you asked me to do this. And I'm thinking to myself, like, fuck, he's such an asshole. But then, oddly enough, in that last episode, I kind of forgot about it for a second. And he's showing up and he's saving the hostages. He stops the truck from going over. And I literally just totally forgot that I hated him. That was a really strange thing.
Yeah, I think he acted poorly and he, you know, he besmirched the good name that is Captain America. And so what he did was wrong under the guise of Captain America. I think under the guise of, you know, these are bad people. You know, yes, he went too far, but I don't think in the scheme of things it's necessarily as bad. If he does that outside of being Captain America, I don't think it's as negatively received. I think the imagery of, you know, the shield that we saw Captain America, you know, almost die for on many, many instances, just covered in blood because of this guy's just inability to cope with the loss of his friend. You know, I think that's really what did it. So I think we all feel very attached to that shield, which is silly, funny, because before Captain America came out, I would have been like, shield is stupid. Captain America's stupid. Who cares about any of this? And now I'm watching a television show where this guy is like, dude, that's not how Captain America acts. I'm like justifying how a fictional character would act. That's right. How invested I am in Steve Rogers.
Oh, and even that homemade shield that we saw in the last episode, like whenever it got hit, it made this like echoey clang. It just sounded so different than when the vibranium shield got hit. You could just tell that it was a bootleg.
It held up pretty good though.
But by the end it was all dented up and gnarly looking, and yeah.
Oh, that reminds me. That was something I wanted to talk about. I loved watching Sam train with the shield. I thought that was so cool. I'm like, how do you practice that? Like, how do you get good at this shield throwing shit? And it was cool to see that montage of him practicing to be it. And then now he's flying, so he's throwing shields and flying at the same time. He's a walk and chew gum kind of guy.
Yeah, someone was showing the clips, and there's like whenever he's like running in the montage, like he's always like right of frame, so there's like room on the left, so it's always like on your left.
Oh, that's so cool.
If intentional, that's a fun nod.
You know, they do. I feel like Disney does do whatever they can to place things early. You know, like it was really cool. Like when you see like just these different shots posted online of, man, did they plan this? Because it just works out really, really well. Whether it be like when he's there was this one photo where like Captain America was stopping someone. He had like this door open, and then it showed the photo being taken. It shows a person on film with a camera taking the picture of Captain America in this action pose. And then that's the photo that's placed in the museum. I thought that was really cool. I was like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah. Or the
old, how do they know to do this stuff?
Yeah. The old man, pallbearer at Peggy Carter's funeral that the Russos said is they've retroactively said is old Steve Rogers.
Oh, that's cool. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I
like stuff like that.
It'd be fun. It'd be weird to be at the same funeral as your like younger self.
Yeah. That's a paradox, Marty.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally. Right, right. I have a real problem with that.
Yeah, if I go that way, I'm gonna run right through the Indians.
Oh, so good. Oh, Back to the Future. Always so good. That's another show that we can always talk about on this podcast. Back to the Future, Roger Rabbit, and Star Wars.
Yeah.
Always welcome.
Yeah. I could talk about all of those all day.
So, final thoughts on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We have all six episodes in. What letter grade do you give this series? And did you enjoy it more than WandaVision? Or is it even fair to compare the two?
I enjoyed it significantly more than WandaVision. I really like the series because I really like the characters of Sam and Bucky. I think that Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan did an incredible job. And, you know, my favorite moments with them are when they're working on the boat together and they're just, you know, they're building their relationship that, you know, they had this, these are two ancillary characters whose whole purpose in life was to be, you know, sidekicks to Steve Rogers. And now they need to step up. And I think that they did an excellent job of elevating, you know, Sam Wilson to Captain America. You know, it's, they're incredibly hard shoes to fill. I really like that, you know, they made Sam even unsure if he could do it. He didn't just come off as this like cocky dude. It's like, oh, I got the shield down, Captain America. And then we had to see him fail. You know, he from Jump Street realized like, dude, I can't do this. And then, you know, through, you know, seeing the world, through talking to people like, you know, Isaiah, and by, you know, working with the Winter Soldier and even Zemo to a smaller extent, you know, he learned that, you know, he can affect the power of change that Steve did just in a different way, and that he is special just like Steve was.
What about you, Randy?
Well, I definitely liked it more than WandaVision, and I enjoyed it as a whole. And this even comes from a place of not being the biggest Captain America fan, and, you know, not even necessarily watching all of the previous movies all the way through in one sitting. But I enjoyed the hell out of this, and I was riveted every week, and I was looking forward to it, and I even set alarms in the case I fell asleep to be able to watch it at midnight on Thursday when it dropped. So it was a lot of fun for me. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it actively makes me want to go back and rewatch the movies, the Captain America movie specifically, to kind of prepare for this. So, yeah, good job on that. And what that tells me is that these series, these Marvel TV series, keep getting better and better, so that means Loki's going to just kick ass, right?
I hope so.
But remember, this is actually filmed before WandaVision, I think. Or they were originally going to have it before WandaVision, but I think something happened to where they, like COVID, I guess, changed things.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier was going to air first, but when COVID hit, WandaVision was farther along in production, so they swapped them.
Yeah. Did you guys give it a letter grade?
I did. I would give it an A. I went back and I watched Captain America: First Avenger because I don't really like that movie. I don't terribly like Joe Johnston as a director. And while I didn't really, I wouldn't say I love it now, because of my, you know, fondness for Chris Evans, Captain America, Steve Rogers, I enjoyed it significantly more. So yeah. But yeah, I would say A minus probably.
Okay.
I would give it a straight up A. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, I'd give it an A as well. I do think that I don't know what it was with the last episode, but I felt like that final just chase was a little bit too long, and I wanted a little bit more talky instead of actiony. I don't know why. It sounds stupid to say, but I really enjoy the conversations that they have on the show. And one thing that I thought was interesting too was that Bucky told the man about his son being murdered, and I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I feel like, you know, sometimes when someone apologizes for something, it's so that they feel better instead of giving the closure. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that one. I feel like that is going to be a lot of strain on this man that became friends with Bucky and was in the process of recovering and healing over all of it. And I'm still not sure if that was the right thing to do. And from a 12-step program, it makes sense, you know, having to make amends. You know, he has this book of names that he needs to atone for. And I feel like that's more for Bucky to feel better about himself than for this poor man that lost his son to feel better. Right. So I don't know.
I don't know if the internet's going to come at me, but I might be misremembering, but I thought that his son was assumed dead, but like no one knows, like they never like found a body or something like that. So I don't think he knows. I was under the impression that he didn't know what was happened to his son, to where like, you know, he didn't know if he was dead, if he was murdered, if he was in hiding, or if he just was lost or something like that. But I could be 100% wrong.
Okay, so then that would be the closure to know that he was murdered. But see, I thought he knew that he was like shot and killed or something. I don't know. I now I forget, because that's the problem with watching these shows at fucking midnight. So you know, can watch it without spoilers or whatever, but then you kind of forget what happened. So now I'm second guessing myself, but I'm still,
because he says your son was murdered by the Winter Soldier. So I you could be right. You know, if I could go back and watch it and realize, oh yeah, he did know. But I understand what you're saying, Tori. Yeah, a lot of times it's to like make you feel better about yourself, to where if, you know, if this was just a dude that was, I mean, obviously everyone should be devastated if their son died, but if this was just someone who was upset that their son died and they're having trouble getting over like the grieving process, I don't see how knowing that like this guy you thought was your friend murdered him would make you, would improve your mood.
Right. It seems a little fucked up if you ask me. So I don't know. I think that's a conversation to have and to visit. I'm unclear as to whether or not it was the right thing to do. I mean, honesty is always the best policy, but that just seems like it's kind of a rough way to wrap up that story.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be interesting. I want to go back and watch the first episode when they go out to like lunch and stuff like that, and they have their conversation about him. But yeah, I thought it was ambiguous, but again, I could be 100% wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know either. Let me know.
We'll
talk about it next week. did you have a fun list for us or no?
I did. You know, in honor of, you know, Mortal Kombat being in the movie theaters right now. You know, I don't know. Take a guess. How many characters have there been in the history of the Mortal Kombat video game franchise, Justin? You're a big fan, so I'll let you guess first.
Sure. I will say 92.
Randy, as the casual fan, would you say it is higher or lower than 92?
I will say lower.
It is lower. It's 77.
Oh, and I almost said 86, but that would have been closer. But
yeah. And the fine folks at Den of Geek have ranked all of them, and while we definitely will not go through all 77 of them, I thought it'd be nice to go over the top 10 to see, you know, some of them. I'm sure Randy has no idea who these people are. and you know, see, you know, as Justin, a super fan, is me kind of like just like a fan, and Randy is kind of like a real casual fan, to see, you know, what we think of this list and if we agree with their numbering system. So so kicking off at number 10 is Aaron Black. And I'm sure Randy's like, Aaron who? Aaron Burr? He shot Hamilton. Aaron Black made his first appearance in Mortal Kombat 10. He's a very visually interesting character in the Mortal Kombat universe because he's like a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the second I saw him, I wanted to know more about him. I don't know if he's the 10th best Mortal Kombat character of all time, but he definitely has a very cool look. So Justin, as someone who knows this character, is this too high a ranking for him?
It might be a too high ranking, yeah. I think he's cool, but top 10, that's pretty stellar.
Yeah, that's rarefied air.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next on the list at number 9 is a character we all know, we all love. We talked about his portrayal in the Mortal Kombat franchise in glowing terms. That is Lord Raiden, Defender of Earthrealm.
Yeah, he's great.
And he makes fun noises.
He does. That's like his Mortal Kombat 1 noise.
Yeah, he's when he's flying towards you.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, calm down, guy.
And Randy, you are familiar with Raiden, I'm assuming, right?
I am, yes. From the game and from the movie.
And for Big Trouble in Little China, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Now, going on to number 8 on the list, it is Sub-Zero / Noob Saibot, making his first appearance as Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat and as Noob Saibot in Mortal Kombat 2. Randy, were you aware there are multiple Sub-Zeros?
I know that if you play multiplayer mode, you play different color versions of them. Does that count?
No, I don't think that's true either. I don't think that's true or counts. The multicolored versions of Sub-Zero would be Scorpion and all the other ones.
Oh.
Randy, well, they look the same. they do look the same. Now, Justin is a fan of the series. Are you a fan of this Sub-Zero, or are you more a fan of, it's Bi-Han, right? It's like the unmasked Sub-Zero?
Yeah, I mean, I like the... So, as a stickler for just the very first Mortal Kombat, I'm all about the original Sub-Zero. I just love the whole head ripping off thing, and I thought that was so goddamn cool. That defined Mortal Kombat for me at a very, very young age, and so that will always be my favorite Sub-Zero.
Right, because Sub-Zero is kind of a dick. Like, the original Sub-Zero is a bad dude, and then his brother is the good Sub-Zero in the later subsequent games.
Yeah. Right.
Takes off that mask. I got nothing to hide.
But then it all ends up kind of being like a frame job with Quan Chi. Like they keep expanding on like the lore as to why these two clans even hate each other, and it gets complicated.
Right. Next on the list at number 7, according to Denageek, of the best Mortal Kombat characters of all time, is Kenshi, our favorite sword-wielding, you know, kind of archetypal character, who made his first appearance in Deadly Alliance. He is not part of the titular Deadly Alliance, but that is where he came from. So, Justin, what's the deal with Kenshi?
Yeah, he's cool because he's got, like, the little blindfold thing. You don't quite know what he's doing. But he's a badass, man. He chops people in half. He had this really cool, like, helicopter spin blade thing where people would fly into his sword. It was really cool.
Nice.
I dig him. I don't know if he's top 10 for me, but, I mean, I can respect this list, I suppose.
Your mileage may vary. Number 6 is a fun little kind of Easter egg in the Mortal Kombat franchise. And, you know, Mortal Kombat came out in the early and mid-90s, depending on which game you started out with. And, you know, on the playground, there was all these rumors of, oh, man, you can do this, and you can do that, and you can do this. And one of the ones that were actually in the code was something that said Ermac. And everyone assumed that meant that this was another character called Ermac. And, you know, it was, you know, legendary. If you beat everyone, if you won 99 victories in a row and never got punched and did fatalities on all of them, and you did the uppercut on the pit to knock the guy in below, you'd unlock Ermac, which, of course, all of that is bullshit and nonsense and impossible to do on an arcade cabinet. But he made his appearance in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, and he is Ermac red?
He's like red and black.
Okay.
Yeah,
Ermac is the red ninja.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, again, he may be a little high on the list. You know, eventually, canonically, he became the embodiment of all of the souls that, car going past, the embodiment of all the souls that Shao Kahn had captured from, you know, other warriors and stuff like that. So Randy, you don't know anything about Ermac, do you?
Never heard of the guy.
He's pretty cool. He's got some fun, like, soul moves and teleports and everything. He's pretty badass. He's kind of a pain in the ass when you got to fight him, but if you get to play him, he's fun and troublesome.
All right, now we're talking number 5. I think a lot of people love this character, and for multiple reasons, she kind of became a little more scantily clad in the later things and a little more naughty. But number 5 is Melina, the clone of Katana, and she was always a fun character. She used size, you know, like Raphael, and I think that's an underutilized weapon, and I think it's kind of cool. And when she pulls her little face garb down, her little face mask, she's got Tarkatan blood in her, and she'll eat it. She'll eat somebody.
Yeah.
So Melina.
She's my main man. That's who I always play as.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, you're probably sad that she's only number 5 then.
Yeah. She's in the movie, though. The new movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Would you place her higher in the list, or do you think 5 is a good spot for her?
I think that's a really good spot for her. It just depends, like, depending on which game you play and which, like, lore, like, they expand on. Like, I think she can be a really good character where, you know, she's competing with her sister. She's trying to win favor over Shao Kahn. You know, she's definitely different. She's got the gnarly face with the Tarkatan genes inside of her. You know, she's a bit of a mess. She's troubled, and that's what I like about her. You know, she's a bad dude.
Yeah, she just wants her dad's affection.
Yeah,
her clone daddy. Speaking of her clone daddy, number 4 is Shao Kahn, making his first appearance as the final boss of Mortal Kombat 2. We realize that he is the one who controls, you know, the outworld forces. You know,
Outworld.
Okay. Outworld's forces. You know, he's the one who commands Shao Kahn and stuff. Or not Shao Kahn, Shang Tsung and things. So number 4, Shao Kahn, he is the cheapest son of a bitch you'll ever play in any of the first couple of Mortal Kombat games. I remember just having this game on Super Nintendo and just swearing at this guy because he was such a cheater.
And he takes like half your health with every hit. He's a fucker, yeah, man.
And he's always taunting you, and I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, he points. He's a pointer.
Yeah. It's not nice. I'm going to break that finger off, point it back at him. Someone who would do that is number 3 on the list, and it's one of Justin's favorites. The man, the myth, the legend, the Johnny Cage.
Yes. Fantastic. I will take all the Johnny Cage I can get.
Yeah, I think he's someone who really, really benefited from the 95 film. You know, I think Daniel Ashby, right? That's the one.
No, it's Lyndon Ashby.
Oh, there you go. I think he really, really elevated the character from kind of someone who was never on my radar in the video game to just the cartoon that he's become, you know, to where now some of his fatalities are very, like, Hollywood-based. Like, there's one that where he goes to, like, do a fatality and, like, it doesn't work. So they like, he's like, cut, redo, take two.
Yeah.
And he keeps doing it. And finally he like walks off set. He's like, I can't work with this kind of amateur.
Yeah. And that's like a total tie into like, this is the part where you fall down in the movie, which is pretty great. And then the guy goes, ah, like just like a flip kind of thing. It's so stupid. Oh, I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
And here we go. No, coming up to the top two, I think top two should be no surprise. Number two is Scorpion, making his first appearance in Mortal Kombat. You know, I think it's up, up, block is his burn your face fatality. I remember that. And,
yep.
Like down, up, high kick, like is a teleport move or?
Down,
or
back.
Down, back. That's right. Because you don't.
Down, back, high punch, I think.
Yeah, you go backwards through the screen. I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. And then back, forward, high punch is his get over here.
Yeah.
Hey, look at me remembering moves.
Yeah, you're doing good.
It's like it's right in front of me. And you could not have Scorpion without Sub-Zero. And so number one on the list is Sub-Zero 2. The Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat 2. The one who tried to be a good guy and tried to make things right. And depending on what you're watching, it either went really well or really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does become Cyber Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat 9. Nine's the one where they retell the first three Mortal Kombat's over, right?
Yeah, it's a complete like retelling with a lot of craziness, and it's basically like a break in like the continuity, and they're trying to save the world, and it's pretty intense. It's really right. Cool.
Because Armageddon is the one where they're all in that temple, and then Shao Kahn is killed right before he kills Raiden. Raiden sends like a message back saying like he must win or something like that.
Yeah, like you got to let him win. Yeah, because ultimately it's him breaking the rules so then the other gods can intervene.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Randy, it's definitely worthwhile because, you know, the cutscenes on these Mortal Kombat games from like 9 on, or there's like 2.5 hours worth of cutscenes. So it's like a full movie. And there are people who've just clipped them all together on YouTube. So you can watch like the entire story. And it's pretty incredible, the stuff they've done.
That's kind of cool. Justin, have you seen those, or how would you rate that in the pantheon of movies?
Yeah, they're great, because I mean, I had to play through the game, and it makes it like a fucking 4-hour game while you're trying to get to the end credits, and all there's nothing but these movies and videos, but they're a lot of fun. Yeah, David just mentioned Armageddon. That was like the last one of like the PS, like the Xbox, and like I think it might have been on PlayStation 3. I don't know. I don't remember anymore. But like, there was a long gap between Mortal Kombat games. And Armageddon, the beginning intro, they're trying to get to this pyramid, and they're all just murdering each other. And that's probably the last game that David probably bought. But I remember we all started playing World of Warcraft around that same time, so it didn't get a whole lot of shelf life, you know, because they're just like, oh shit, I'm just gonna go ahead and play World of Warcraft instead. But that cinematic was really cool. But the ones that from Mortal Kombat 9. And 10 and 11, they're fucking amazing. They're really cool cinematics, and it's a really cool story that's playing out. And there's death and carnage, and it's gnarly, man. It is a treat, an absolute treat.
Yeah.
You had me at death and carnage.
There you go.
And for those of you curious at home, Shang Tsung was 20, or Liu Kang was 15, Shang Tsung was 24, Sonya Blade was 40. Which is interesting because Jax was like 35. So Jax, they have over Sonya. Motaro, 55. So yeah, it's interesting. Some of these later picks are kind of interesting. Baracho is number 60. Everyone loves Baracho.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
So that is my list.
Where was Reptile at on this list?
Reptile was 31.
Wow. All right. Crazy.
And this is on Den of Geek. If you want to look at the full list of every all 77 Mortal Kombat characters, and because people want to know, number 77 is Rico
Suave. Where was Shang Tsung at on this list?
Shang Tsung was 40.
Fuck, that's crazy.
I think a lot of it might have been like as a playable character, you don't do a lot with Shang Tsung. He's a lot of times he's like doing stuff in the background, maybe. That's the only thing.
Yeah. So I get, are they basing it on playability, or are they basing it on just how cool the character is because of like the lore and stuff? What was the basis of this ranking, do you know?
Similarly, I'm not counting. Nope, doesn't say. I'm ranking these based on style, storyline, and personal preference, not over who has the better infinite combos and all that jazz. Just be warned, there will be spoilers.
Alright.
So I'm sure he had a very scientific list.
Sure. All right. I mean, it's hard to do. You said there were 70, how many?
77.
77. Yeah, that's a lot. So, what? Summer hits, summer misses.
Yeah, and it's all you know, subjective. Like, I like Sub-Zero more than Scorpion, but if someone were to say that Scorpion is better than Shao Kahn, Sub-Zero, I wouldn't be like, no, you're not. That's wrong.
Yeah, idiot. You don't know. Yeah. Those two definitely belong in the top five. So you can put them wherever you want. But yeah, I think 1 and 2 is a pretty good ranking for those guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. My list. Well, cool. Does anybody else have anything to add?
Not a goddamn thing.
Not I.
All right. Thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Remember to check out the other shows that we got. Of course, there's the Pixelated Podcast, which is on a brief hiatus, but it'll be returning shortly. And then, of course, you have the Don't Be Crazy Podcast, hosted by Mr. Zachary Rancourt. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe and stay tuned for the Geek Legacy Escape Pod, which is a lot of fun, talking about Star Trek. And we're having a blast. Thank you very much for listening to that. And you keep rock and rolling, baby. Thank you so much.